that's going forward. Today, we're going to have to finish in time to get back for Tehillim and Milchai, so Tehillim is still 1 o'clock. So we'll leave that there by 12:55. We'll go back for Tehillim and Milchai. Because it's Thursday, I'm going to try to leave a little bit of time at the end for something on the Parsha. We'll see if there's time for that. But I really want to get through today, see if Hay and Vav, and then Bezushem on Sunday to go through see if it was Zayin and Ches, and maybe even begin some Sadi Beis, but probably not. So that's the goal for today. The thing with Si'if Hey is that not only is it very long and there's a lot of but there's a lot of background that's necessary to be able to learn Si'if Hey. Meaning, essentially, you need to learn all the Smilicha before you do Si'if Hey. Oh, before I forget, I put a couple of shaylas that people asked over the last day on the chat. I do that to, because once we learn something, so like the goal is you should be able to, to answer those kinds of things. So let's get some thoughts. One Shaila was the girl who was in law school and they ordered pizza, and everyone else getting pepperoni pizza with real pepperoni, and then ordering from a kosher place, and she wanted to know, could she eat the fake pepperoni pizza from the kosher place while everyone else eating the real pepperoni pizza from the non-kosher place? Was that an issue of Maris Ha'ayin? So there are layers over here, but what's the thought process?
Could it be related to your calling on whether or not Maris is treated in Maris Ha'ayin, depending on who is there?
Does the context matter for Maris Ha'ayin? Meaning, we know that what definitely matters for Maris Ha'ayin is having the shkedim out, right? So that you know that it's called shkedim. So maybe having the label out in the pizza box or something like that. Okay, so we can talk about that. But is the fact that other people are eating treif in that context enhance the Maris Ha'ayin? Or do we say, no, there's not a lot of Maris Ha'ayin just based on your maisa? It doesn't matter what other people are doing. Maris Ha'ayin is, Yafil B'chadrich, it doesn't really make a difference what other people are doing. So that's one element of it.
I think have another Jew walk by you, both have a
chashish and a lefeiver. So if you break down Maris Ha'ayin into the chashad and the lefeiver, so from the chashad perspective, it's through the roof, but there are other people that are eating pepperoni pizza, and they're seeing you eating something that looks like pepperoni pizza. From the lefeiver perspective, not as much, right?
Because they could theoretically, like let's say another firm person walks by, thinks, oh, she's eating that. That might, you can go both ways and think it's kosher pizza or it's not kosher pizza, depending on that person. And then you could potentially go and grab a slice because you think it's kosher because she's eating it.
Right. Okay.
Or you can say,
oh, meaning if you, right, depending on what you think of the person.
Right.
Right, that's easy. Okay, good.
That means like the business meeting in an Apple restaurant where you have kosher meal with all the wrappers.
Right, so usually it's obvious enough. Although sometimes they'll send it on a china plate, meaning they'll send it on a real plate because it's embarrassing to be eating off of. Or sometimes the fancy non-kosher restaurant doesn't want someone eating off of plastic dishes, in their restaurant. So they'll actually send the food on the on a real piece of china, and it'll just throw it out. Those plates don't cost that much, and they'll the silverware also. But what do you pay in a fancy restaurant for a steak? In Manhattan, you probably pay $100 for the steak, right? So for the 39 cents that it costs for the plate and the fork and the knife, they're willing to sacrifice the fork, and it's worth it for them. So yes, that's interesting. But really, technically, the heter of Maris Ha'ayin is that it becomes a davar yadua enough, right? Rabbi Sablowski was talking to us the other day that nowadays everyone knows part of ice cream is part of ice cream. Is pepperoni pizza such a davar yadua? I mean, I don't know. There are. I live in the five towns. I live just outside the five towns, just north of the five towns. And in our general vicinity, we have, I don't know, something like 10 kosher pizza shops, something like that. I don't even know if any of them serve fake pepper. Do you know?
Pizza
Professor just started. Okay. Yeah. We have Pizza Professor?
No.
There's
no possibility. I'm not involved in VAD anymore, so it's more Shepherdrani. So I didn't realize. But I've never even seen it. I don't think I've ever even seen it. It's certainly not on the level of like Nader and Creamer, right? Meaning it's not. So Lachar, it's just not a Maris Ha'ayin issue, right? I would think that really is a Maris Ha'ayin issue. Okay, what about the other Shaila? I just want to get to Malicha soon. What about the other Shaila? What was the other Shaila? A doctor. So he has a coffee about a half hour before lunchtime to push him through the end of the morning. And then he has lunch, and very often for lunch, he'll have a grilled chicken salad for lunch. Or a grilled steak salad. So he wants to know, or not a salad, a piece of grilled chicken, right? The whole Shabbat is a bracha Shabbat. So he said he made a bracha of shakol liyavaro on the coffee, and then a half hour later he's eating this piece of grilled chicken. So does he need to make a new bracha on the piece of grilled chicken? And he said he's makpid to wait a half hour. So does he need to say new bracha on the chicken? So what do you tell him?
Normally not
yotze
or
mashke
anyway, so even if you
were
going to eat your food afterwards,
you'd
have to say
shabbat. Ah, so a bracha on a maichel will people pater a maichel. A bracha on a maichel is not going to pater a maichel anyway, okay, good. Let's say he, together with the coffee, had, a piece of chocolate. Yeah.
I'm working in Bronx, and Prasayah says that when it comes to chomets, the first thing to make a bracha on matzahs, and the pizza can work for chomets.
Right.
Here
might be different because you have the Zohar of Sudas Chada. It's a Sudas Chada may be defined by the bracha. Mamish? Where? On Chulin? Okay, find it for me and send it, okay? What? Yeah, you're fine to send it. Okay, good. Excellent. All right, let's get into it. Belicha now. There are essentially three passages of Mechaber and three comments of the Rama here in Sif Hei. Probably because it's such a long Sif, because they were trying to pack in all of the Hilchos Belicha into one Sif in the Hilchos Basi Mechala, and that's tough to do. So it became this super long Mechaber and super long Rama. But we haven't learned Hilchos Belicha. It used to be part of this program to learn Hilchos Belicha. Used to be part of the program to learn Hilchos Shechita as well. And before that, years before that, it was part of the Shechita program to learn Hilchos Treifos. So they got rid of Treifos first because it's all industrial now. Like, we're never going to be dealing, the typical communal rabbi will never deal with Hilchos Treifos. But they kept Melicha because a lot of the Yesodos and Tarovas really come through Hilchos Melicha. So once you do Melicha, you do Shechita, because a lot of these sons know those brachos and Ritzah Mitzvah and things like that. And Kisei Adam, like a lot of very Levitic sugyas in the Shechita. So when I was here, we were still doing Shechita Melicha. We were not doing Treifos anymore. But now we've gotten into Shechita Melicha also. And we, instead of Shechita Melicha, we now do Hechsher Kelim and Tevilas Kelim and things like that, which obviously are much more common shaylas than Shechita and Melicha. Rabbi Hananya Berzon told me, Rabbi Hananya Berzon, I believe, is like Moshe Fu's age. He's one of the Berzon brothers. It was Hananya, Azaria, and Mishael. I'm not sure if it's Mishael, but there's only Hananya and Azaria that are both brothers. He told me that his year was the first year that they didn't do treifos. And his father was a chashev rav, and he got a shteller somewhere in, Virginia or something, or Vermont. I know those are different, but some of them be. And he came down, and the first shteller he got, the local butcher came to him with the chicken, and they said, is it a treifos or not? So he said, good Shiloh, let me think about it. He'll come back to me in an hour or two. He called up his father. He's like, what the hell am I supposed to do? You couldn't just take a picture and send it. You know, they didn't have that back then. So typically we don't get such Shilohs on trains. So Ilkis Melicha is our Chash Masudhyas, but we don't do it anymore. So a lot of this is a lot of the terminology that's used over here is Simon Samach Tes terminology. So it's important just to get a little bit of background. So there are two shiurim for Melicha. Shiurim meaning amounts of time that Melicha takes that are often confused with each other, and it's therefore important to get it straight the first time. As far as how long one needs to salt meat, how long does the salt need to stay on the meat in order to pull out the blood? How long does salt need to be on the meat in order to affect a transference of tam in general? So salt needs, when we're doing melicha for the sake of drawing out the blood, it has to stay on the meat kidei hiluch mil, which we assume generally is about 18 minutes. The Ramah says that, I'm not talking about the amount of salt, we'll get to that, it's another issue. Now we're just talking about how long the salt has to stay on the meat. So kidei hiluch mil. When I visited, when I was learning shlita, so after a couple of months of learning shlita, we went to a David Elliott poultry in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and they have a whole system set up where after they do the melicha, they put the chickens on a conveyor belt, and it's a very, very, very slow moving conveyor belt, and it's designed to be just the right amount of time that it needs to sit in the salt. And they have it set up, it's brilliant. I mean, they set up machines to do a lot of the things so that you don't need to think about things. Like the machine then drops the chicken and go plop, because that's one of the things that you're supposed to do with melicha also, is that it's supposed to be shaken off. So instead of having a human shake the salt over there, it plops and it goes into a pool, and that's the hadach and everything. So they have it all done by machine in these places. But anyway, it's got to stay in for 18 minutes. But Ramah adds a chumrah, like he always does, that unless there's a tzorich or a hefsid, the minig is to leave it in the salt for an hour, that the salt stays on the meat for an hour, and that's what they do. It's a very, very slow conveyor belt. It stays on for an hour. But when we say shir melicha without the chumrat ramah, it means 18 minutes. It means kedei hiluch mil. But then there's another issue in Siman Samachtes that appears in Si'if Yud Ches, Siman Samachtes of Yud Ches. Normally, tam only transfers with heat, right? That's the general klal. The tam transfers with heat. But there are two other ways that the Gemara introduces us that blios can transfer from one item to the next, and that is kavush kumavushal and meliach keroseach. That when something is kavush, when something is pickled and brined, so that also transfers tam. And meliach keroseach, when something is salted, it also has the ability to transfer tam. Now, something that's heavily salted so much that it's einu nechal machmas malchum is then able to transfer tam. Is maluach enough to be able to transfer tam? So there's something called kavush de melicha. What does kavush de melicha mean? It means that something that's soaking in a salted brine. So it's a combination of kavush and melicha together. Soaking in a salted brine. Now normally for kavush you need 24 hours. But kavush de melicha does not require 24 hours. Just the amount of time, kishir, and this is the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, kishir sheyitnu mayim ala esh v'yaschil artiyach. How long does kavush de melicha have to happen in order for time to transfer? The amount of time that it takes when you put a pot of water on the fire and it starts to bubble up. So how long does that take when you put a pot of water on the fire and start? How long does it take to start to bubble up? That's a crazy question, because it depends how big the pot is, how big the fire is, how cold the water was beforehand. Right? I mean, what kind of shear is that? That's like the worst shear ever. How do you possibly measure that amount? Very, very difficult shear. The length of time will depend how much water, how big the fire, temperature of the water. So Kivega says that it's determined by each item that you're talking about. The quantity is determined by how long it would take. Meaning if you are pickling something, if you are soaking something in a brine, with kavush de melicha, you would have to measure that amount of brine on a fire and how long that would take. If that brine were water, how long would that take to start boiling up? Still doesn't really solve the problem, because we're still missing the other factor, right? How big is the fire? If it's a bigger fire, will boil up more quickly. So Bikveger tries to solve the problem, but it doesn't really solve the problem. It's also logically problematic, because what Bikveger is saying is that the shear of kavush de melicha on a small jar, let's say a small pickle jar with pickle juice in it, let's say that would take 5 minutes to come to a boil, and then I have the same amount of pickles, but I just add more pickle juice into the jar, and now the kavush de melicha is going to take an hour. Well, why? Meaning it will take longer for the tam to transfer if I have more pickle juice in the jar than if I had less pickle juice in the jar. It's just very, very shredded. The Rebbe Kivega is very, very difficult to understand. But that's the concept of kavush de melicha. So it's important not to confuse the two shir. The lashon of shir melicha is different than kavush de melicha. So as far as kavush de melicha, Chacham Sadim gives a shir. He says that it's about 6 minutes. It's much less than the shir melicha of halichas meal, and especially much less than the chumrat ramah of an hour. But the kavush de melicha is about 6 minutes. Another important hakdama to sifhei is the rule of ein melicha bekelim lahafli. That if you salt a container, a kli, the kli will not be polate through melicha. If you have a tray for kli, no matter how much you salt that kli, glios are not coming out of a kli through melicha. So if you put salted meat on a melicha kli, the kli is treif because it will be boleya through melicha. The meat is being polate and the kli will be boleya, but it will not be maflit through the salting, and therefore, while the kli is treif, the meat is totally fine. Because the melicha ketan in the plate will not be polate through the salting. The question is whether that also applies to kavash to melicha. Let's say you don't just put a salted piece of food on a plate, but let's say you soak a flesh in a spoon in a pickle jar. And that can happen, by the way. You take a fork to take out a pickle from the pickle jar, and you say, you know what? I'm not going to be the last one to have a pickle from this pickle jar, so I'm going to, why should the next guy have to stick his hand in and get it all full of pickle juice? I'll just leave the fork in the pickle jar. Problem is, it's a flesh of a fork that you just dropped into the pickle jar and you just left it there. So now, you soak a flesh of a spoon or a fork in a pickle jar, do the pickles now become flesh? Right? Are you now allowed to, you have to assume that they're balei on the tam of the kli. So that's a machlokas between the shach and Rabbi Kiveg and Rabbi Magen Avraham. The shach in Simas HaMechess, in Kodesh HaMechess, says, kli is not maflik from melicha, not even kavash to melicha. It's not maflik. Kli is not maflik anything. Whereas Rabbi Kiveg or Rabbi Magen Avraham disagrees and says, no, a kli is not maflik with melicha, but with kavash to melicha, then a kli is going to be maflik. So the machlokas can be explained based on two ways to understand the rule of Ein Melicha Dekeim L'Havdil. Meaning, what's the longest of Ein Melicha Dekeim L'Havdil? Why is it that when you salt a kli, that it's not polate any time from the kli? So apparently, Magen Avraham assumes that blios only go from a meliach to a non-meliach. A kli never gets meluach. Meaning the meluach of a kli is always considered a tamei tafel. Meaning there's no such thing as salting a kli. Meaning a kli will always be considered like an unsalted item. So putting a salted piece of meat into it is the same putting salted meat together with unsalted cheese. If that's true, then a liquor would be different because kavash melicha makes it that the kli can be mafli. Right? Meaning that when you're dealing with liquid, maybe it affects the transference of time. The other explanation is just ein melicha became lahafud, is that if you salt something and it stays dry, then that's an indication that the salt didn't do anything. Meaning if you salt something and you see starts oozing, so now you know the salting is impacting it. But if you salt something and it stays dry and nothing seems to happen to it, so that's an indication the salting didn't do anything. So if you salt the plate doesn't start to schwitz, the plate doesn't start to have condensation from the salt or anything like that, so it's impervious to salt. And that's perhaps the basis for the shach, that even kavash de melicha has no impact on a kli. Okay, but whatever the machlokas is about, not really so important. But that's hakdama number two, that there is this concept of that melicha does not affect a plater from a kli, just a plater from foods themselves. Now, third hakdama is that there are three levels of salting meat. Three levels of salting meat. There's melicha tzli, which is the little bit of salt that you would need to sprinkle on a piece of meat in order to be able to roast it. When you roast meat, we assume that the roasting itself draws out most of the blood, so you don't need so much melicha in order to be able to roast a piece of meat on an open fire. Then there's meliach tikdera, which is the regular melicha that you need for cooking, which draws out the salt. If you've ever, anyone here ever see a melicha? See how it's done? So if you've never seen it, like Rabbi Reisman said, he had a when he was learning Yerodei in Torah Das, there was a guy in the kollel with him who learned all of this melicha, took pechinas, did very well with pechinas, he knew backwards and forward. And one day, one of the local nursing homes or something had some sort of emergency where the regular mashkiach couldn't make it that day, and they called the yeshiva and said, do you know anyone? So he had to come to, and apparently, I don't know, they had non-salted, melicha, nursing, I don't know, but the guy had to oversee the melicha, and they put salt on it, and he kept on saying more, because they couldn't see the melech it right away is because you know you can put a lot of salt in it, and you're not going to see it. You're not going to necessarily see the salt because it's really drawing out a lot of blood. It just looks like a bunch of blood, so it's not really so visible. So the guy kept on saying more, more, more until they ruined the meat and they couldn't use it. So that's the third madrega, right? When it becomes eino nechal nachmas molcho, or that might be a subcategory of the second madrega. Where you're salting it so much, the salt is not immediately evident on the surface. But you're, the halach is not supposed to keep piling on salt. There's you put on a regular amount of salt. But then there's a third level, which is salting for preserving. In pre-refrigeration days, they would salt to preserve the meat for a long time. And it would remain eino nechal until they would soak it. Meaning such salting, even if you rinsed it afterwards, it would still be inedible. They would have to actually soak it in water in order for it to become edible again. But the salt was serving its purpose in allowing it to be preserved for that period of time. Now, for our purposes, we're going to need to figure out when the salt, the first thing the Mechaber the Rambam deal with, is when does the salt make it kiroteach? Right, let's assume that you need a shir melicha for melicha that, the first shir melicha, not kavush shemulah, for first shir melicha, you need 18 minutes for salting to happen. Right, so when do we assume it's karotech? In the first 18 minutes? Or dafka after the first 18 minutes? So if you start the sieve, right, how does it go? Says the Mechaber, melicha shem yachal yachal machlas molcho, which we'll get back to how much salt it needs to be, but whatever, when something is salted, dahainu ke'en melicha shem molcho l'kadeira, Vishah kedei meliach lekedeira. That's shir melicha. Not kavush shemulah. Shir melicha. It spent a full shir melicha. Kol zman shlavitichur mikriyeno nechal machmas malka. That so long as you haven't yet rinsed it off, so that's where time is going to be transferring. Right after it's had its 18 minutes, that's where time is going to transfer. Comes along the Rama. Vyeshom mitalach shav mok shir melicha lo mikriyach kachrotea. No, since the salt makes its impact in those first 18 minutes, that's where the molecules are shaking into each other and moving and things are happening. That's when it's considered like it's rodeah. But after that, it's not rodeah anymore. Everything's calmed down. The situation has calmed down after that. It's only in the first 18 minutes that it's considered to be a problem. So the Rama writes that Lutzarkatul come back to Maruba, but Lutzarkatul Smitzvah, Yeshlus Machamakilu. He says that even though Yesh Omrim, that after it's Bimolcho, Shir Melicha, Lomikriach Kachroteach, and therefore that would inevitably lead you, whenever the Ramah says Yesh Omrim, he's not saying, and therefore I think we could be Makel in the other way, he's usually saying, he's the Ramah, so he's saying we should be Machmir for everything, right? So you'd have to be Machmir in the first 18 minutes and Machmir after the first 18 minutes. But he says, Lutzarkatul, we could be Somechal Machaber. Right, we saw in Mechaber that it only becomes rotayach after the first 18 minutes. But he doesn't just say hefsim ruba. He says hefsim ruba vuhu letzaruch sudas mitzvah yesh l'smachal makilin. You need two things: that it's hefsim ruba and sudas mitzvah, which is interesting. There are other points in this Ramah, in this sieve, where the Ramah is going to be making on hefsim ruba, and he does not require sudas mitzvah. Over here, he says hefsim ruba and sudas mitzvah. So where does he get it from? He's getting it from Tshuvas Hadasha, right? He calls Tshuvas Hadasha something from the test. So if you look at the Tshuvas Hadasha and the Shailim, the Tshuvas Hadasha happened to have involved the sudas mitzvah. So you always have to ask yourself, well, wait a second. Just because the Shailim involved the sudas mitzvah, maybe that's why the Tshuvas Hadasha said you need a sudas mitzvah and hefsim ruba, because that happened to have been the Shailim. But maybe hefsim ruba alone would have been good enough even without sudas mitzvah. Right? Maybe, so why does the Rama just assume that you need both? Tshuvas Hadasha happened to have been dealing with the Shaila that involves the Mitzvah. Maybe they see that was critical to the Psak. So what's the answer? What do we know about the Tshuvas Hadasha? He made up the Shailas. So the Tshuvas Hadasha made up his own Shailas. No one asked him a Shaila. So why would he make up a Shaila about a Tshuvas Mitzvah, make up a Shaila? Right? If it doesn't change the landscape. So from the fact that he made up the Shaila in that way, so that's L'chora, what indicates to the Ramah. I'm just thinking out loud. No, that's L'chora, what indicates to the Ramah that both of those factors are critical. If you look at the Shach, where he quotes that the Tshuvas Hadasha made up the Shailas, he doesn't really say Tshuvas Hadasha made up all of the Shailas. He said it's the derech of the Tshuvas Hadasha to make up many of his Shailas. But, you know, it's easy to tell, right, when his Shailas are a bit. His Shailas aren't that great, right? Meaning, like, real life shilas are much more exciting usually. You go through Nigros Moshe, those shilas are much more exciting. Those are real life shilas. And Shubha Zasha shilas are like, when's Man Kriya Shema? Like, it's like, you know, so in general, okay, but maybe that's the assumption over here. Now, the basis of this whole sugya is a sugya that appears in two places in Shas, but we'll go Pesach Mayim Vav, that Amar Marat Sonei Letzotzonei Madiach, as we've seen, called into Koldi Madiach, Amar Avunu Lashonu Lashalom Malcha. Now, called and called, you only need to be Madiach, it's only if you want to solve it. Amar Malcha Asim. But if you salt it, then it's going to be awesome. To Amar Shmuel, Miliach Harei Kuroseach, Kom Sherei Kum Bushu. Shmuel told us this cloud, and Miliach is Kuroseach. Amar Rava, Hot Amar Shmuel, Miliach Harei Kuroseach, Lo Amrun, El Shalom Nechel Machlas Malko. Not any amount of salt makes something Miliach Kuroseach. It has to be so salty that it's Eino Nechel Machlas Malko. Amar Nechel Machlas Malko, if it's still edible, then we don't consider that to be salty. That's the Gemara. And therefore, if it's still edible, and it's just cold and cold, you just need hadacha, there's nothing yet, there's no transference of tam or anything like that. Then the Gemara tells a story. Ubar gozla d'nafa l'koda d'tamcha shari rechidna b'reidra mi pashrunya. So a bird landed into a pot of something, and rechidna b'reidra d'rami pashrunya was matir it. Ooh, what a big Talmud Chacham it took to be matir such a thing. Why was he able to be mekel? Because it wasn't meluach. So okay, the meliach roseach. The Gemara is telling us is something that's salted has the status of something that's hot, and it can be balei a flavor from foods that it comes in contact with, but only if it's eino nechel machnas molcho. Kutach is edible, so this bird fell into kutach, right? Kutach is maybe dairy, but it is edible, and because it's even though it's salty, but since it's edible, it's nechel machnas molcho, so you don't have this din, meliach roseach. Right, since it's something that was eaten, so the whole din of Meliach Kuroseach, you get the impression that Kutach did have like a pungent, strong taste. It was some type of very strong dip made out of very unusual ingredients, right? But nevertheless, if it was eaten, it was Nechal, it was not Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho, and therefore we're never din of Meliach Kuroseach. L'chora, from a Basar B'chala perspective, the din of Meliach Kuroseach is for sure din Drabba, right? Meaning, either because the entire concept of Meliach Kuroseach, maybe even from a Tavrovis perspective, is Drabbanan, and it's not Nosin Tamad at Doraisa level, that's a possibility, or because it's just not considered Derech Bishul. Meaning, Kavush Kim Mavushal, it's Nosin Tamad Doraisa, but only be Drabbanan by Basu Chal, because it's not considered Derech Bishul. So if it's not Derech Bishul as Vitaru would not be Basu Chal be Doraisa. Now, the Rashba, and I think right that is that the last sif over here in the siman in sif ches shemiyah ein bas bechal of nes al yidei melicha al yidei kavush el ba'achila v'lo ba'ana. Right, whatever it's melicha or kavush that creates this bas bechal of, it's not going to be aser ba'ana. Why? Because bas bechal mitrabban. Bas bechal mitrabban is not aser ba'ana. Right, that's why. So we're dealing with rabbanim over here. That's for sure. The Rashba explains that even though the nature of salt is to draw out blood and primarily to be maflit, when there's an abundance of salt, it even has the ability to be mavliya as well, not just to be maflit. So if there is insufficient salt, we assume that there's no bliya whatsoever, as opposed to like a small degree of heat, which would be mavliya, just not as much. You know, when we talk about like a roteach al gavi tzolein, so it's a tiny amount of heat, so it's mavliya kedei klipa. But when it's insufficient salt, we assume that it's not going to be mavliya at all. Now, the Gemara tells us that, and in Chul Daf Kafir Aleph, that according to Ravin, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with this entire din. And he says, Meliach eino k'roseach, kavush zeino k'mavushol. And Tosu there discusses, well, isn't that against the Braisa? Could Rabbi Yochanan be arguing on the Braisa? Okay, the Gemara then says, Hadda Rav and Lessa, Rav's report of Rabbi Yochanan's sheet is totally incorrect. because over there it happened to have been a Kli Cheres, because it happened to be that there was a Kli Cheres in Rav Ami's house where they salted meat in it, and then because they salted meat in this Kli Cheres, he just broke it, because he assumed it absorbed the blood. So he assumed that it was a tray for Kli. So you see the Meliach Harei Groseach. So the Gemara says, wait, Mifti, Rav Ami, Talmud Rav Yochanan, my time at Tavre. Why did Rav Ami, was Talmud Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan disagrees with the whole thing of Meliach Groseach? Why is Rav Ami breaking the Kli? Right? So the Gemara says, La Mishum Tishmi Eliminate Rav Yochanan, don't Meliach Harei Groseach. It must be that we're wrong about Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan also holds Meliach Groseach. That's universally agreed, the Meliach Groseach, and therefore the Gemara says, Meliach Groseach is a klal. And any reports that Rav Yochanan said to the contrary are simply not true. It's a klal, it's accepted La Halacha. As a total parenthetical note, the Rishonim are bothered, even if you do hold Meliach Groseach, why do you got to break the Kli? Right, just to tie it back to something we did recently, the Ramban in the Chidushim says, why do you have to break the Kli? Use it as a fruit bowl. Okay, so it absorbs from time to time. So keep apples and oranges and grapes in it. Use it as a fruit bowl. Why do you have to break it? Why do you have to destroy it? I mean, nowadays, we throw out kelim very easily. Even after shalach manas, you end up with, if you get a lot of shalach, you have all these kelim, but where am I going to put all these things? So you give them away or get rid of them some other. But like a kli was a thing, it was something that was important. They didn't just break kelim so easily. So why would they break it? So Ramban suggests that he was concerned he might use it with hot if he kept it around. Very similar. Farshah, right? About using something, keeping the tray for kli around. Because of the concern that you might use Bederach Kappa. Okay. So what have we done so far? We've given a basic akdama to just the terminology of Shir Malicha and Kavash to Maluach. We spoke about how Malicha does not impact Kalim. We spoke about the three different levels of salting meat. And we said that it's Mefurish in the Gemara that Maliach is Karoseach, but only when it's Eino Nechal Machmas Malach. Right, only when it gets to the point of Eino Nechal Machmas Malach. So let's dig into that a little bit. Meaning, we spoke a little bit about the amount of time that you need in order for Malicha to become Kiroseach, which anyway, we're Machmir B'chalin, in the lesson, it's a Sudas Mitzvah, and Epsin Meruba, we're Machmir that the time doesn't matter, whether you're within the first 18 minutes or after the first 18 minutes, whichever sheet you hold, you're going to end up being Machmir if you're an Ashkenazi, right? So we're Machmir on both ends of that. But how much salt does it have to be in order to affect Meliach Kiroseach? So the Gemara Kuf Yud Beis, and Pesach Ma'ayim we just mentioned, says that Eino Nechal Machmas Malach is the key. There is a machlokas rishonim, a significant machlokas rishonim with like seven different shittos about what Eino Nechal Machmas Malach means. How salty does it have to be? I don't know if we have to go through every shitta that we shown it, but just to give a sample. Rashi in Chulin Kufi Beis Amud Aleph writes Eino Noach Le'Ochel Merov Melach Shabo Ad Shesharin Umadichnos Abimayim. Ke'en melichas basol atzniya. What's basol atzniya? We are three levels, is to preserve. And Rashi says that Eino Nechal Machmas Malach is that it's so salty that you would not only need to rinse it, you would need to soak it. You would need to soak it in order to ever eat it. Because you've salted it so much, you want to preserve it, so you're not going to be able to eat it until you soak it. Skirt steak? Maybe. I don't know. Right, skirt steak is very salty. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Yeah, mm-hmm. Skirt steak. So if you make your own skirt steak, it's very, very salty. I don't know, before I put it on the grill, I soak it in water for a while first, no? Am I the only one? Right? Yeah, do that too. So I don't know. No? You know, you like it so salty? So maybe I'm just too sensitive. So. Okay, so maybe that's a bad example. All right. That's Shittas Rashi. Rashi Psachim, that's Rashi Mechulim. Rashi in Pesachim seems to say it a little differently. He says that it only becomes edible if you're madicho kodem l'chir. He says that it's salty enough that you need to rinse it. Rinse it? What about soaking it? So apparently, a much lower level of malicha, that you don't even need to soak it, you just need to rinse it in order to make it edible. And that's already considered Eino Nechal Machmas Malach. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael, which that alone is notable, and there was a Bala Tosos that had two names. Most of the Rishonim only had one name. It's become popular in recent centuries to give people two names, but in the times of the Rishonim, they were still sticking with one person, one name. Right? That's the way it went. But and whenever you do have in Rishonim people with two names, usually they're really the same, right? Meaning even you know when we started with two names, usually it was one Yiddish name and that was just a translation of the Hebrew name, right? It was always Aryeh Leib, it was always Tzvi Harish. So now it's become Meshulam David. Avishai Meshulam David, right? Yeah? I got it totally wrong. Okay, so then now, what was it again?
Avichai
Shalom David. Avichai, that wasn't so off. All right, Avichai Shalom David. So, but it used to be that, okay, so Yisrael Yaakov is the same person, right? It's the same forefather. Just at different times in his life, right? So the Tosfos quotes about the Tosfos that named Rabbeinu Yisrael Yaakov, who says the Lo Chashav Eino Nechal Machmas Malcha El Kein Nimlach Kein Ibud. It sounds like it's the same as Shitas Rashi, the way Tosfos presents it, but in the Rashi and the Torah, it's clear that that's a different Shita. Ibud is the amount of salt you would put to tan a hide, to tan a piece of leather. What it has in common with Rashi, with the first Rashi, is that even after you rinse it, it's still not edible. Meaning, rinsing is not going to do it. It's that salty, that even rinsing it is not going to make it edible. Rabbeinu Tam holds that even maluach l'kedera is enough to be considered enough for machmas malcha. What's maluach l'kedera? Remember, that was one of our akadamas, right? We have three levels of maluach. There's maluach l'tzli, maluach l'kedera, and maluach l'tzniyah. So maluach l'kedera is just a regular salting that you need to that you do to any piece of meat to make it ready to cook, to be able to cook in a pot. So Rabbeinu Tam holds maluach l'kedera is already in a nechal machmas malcha because so long as you don't rinse it off, rinse the salt off, it's going to stay inedible. By the time you get it in the package in the store in the supermarket, the salt has been rinsed off. But the amount of salt that they use to salt it. For regular cooking, that's maluach l'kedera. Once you rinse the salt off, so then it's no longer a tayach, because it's no longer has salt. Shulchan Aruch passes over Rabbeinu Tam. Right? Shulchan Aruch, we say, ke'en maluach shemolchim l'kedera. Right? That's clear in Shulchan Aruch, like Rabbeinu Tam. The writer in Tmim Deim, in Siman Hey, challenges Rabbeinu Tam. Because it doesn't say, eino nechal im molcho. It says, eino nechal machmas molcho. What's the raya? That the writer says it has to be something saltier. That even after the salt is removed, it's still inedible. Because Eirodechon Machmas Molcho means that it's inedible because it has a history of being salted. Not because there's salt in it right now. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it's only inedible when the salt is still on it. As soon as you rinse the salt off of it, it's edible. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, it should have been Eirodechon Im Molcho, Im with an ayin. That it's not edible with the salt that's on it. So the Rabbi says clearly that he doesn't think Rabbeinu Tam is correct. The Ritva challenges Rabbeinu Tam, that the implication of Rabbeinu Tam is that it's not edible while it's being salted, but if it were edible, it would be mutter to eat. Meaning the whole idea of Eino Nechal is that it's not edible because you wouldn't eat it because of the salt. But otherwise, you'd be allowed to eat it. Well, that's not really true. When meat is being salted, you're not when this and the salt is on the meat, it's usher to eat. Why is it usher to eat? It's full of blood, right? That the whole point of the salt is draw out the blood. So it's full of blood. So that's what the Shach and Sukkot Yeralapovir tries to forever, right? The Shach says, we're not talking about when they're actually doing the mulcho. We're talking about how much salt you would need to salt a piece of meat to create that sense of Maliach Karoseya. So we're talking about a case where the meat was salted in the butcher shop, in the Shachtos or whatever. It was rinsed off. It was packaged. You went to Gourmet Glot. You bought the meat. Now, in your recipe, you threw a bunch of salt on it, and you did another melicha on it. How much melicha? Not because you're trying to draw blood. It was a recipe, whatever. You were just doing that. You just put salt in it again. So there's no chashash of any dam anymore. It's just that you're putting salt on it for whatever reason, and then you're going to rinse off the salt afterwards. So, yeah, the only reason you wouldn't eat it while the salt is there is because it's too salty. That's the case. The meat was previously salted and then rinsed, and now you're re-salting it. The Rabbeinu Tam's raya is the fact that each time the Gemara talks about cases of Maliach Karoseya, it seems to be talking about the regular salting process. Right? The Reish Kalusa was Malach Yerech in Gid Anasha. Amr Shmuel Ka'ara Shemalach Ba'basar Asulach Barotech. Meaning, it sounds like every time it's describing Melicha, in the context of Melicha Karasev, is that it's just describing how they used to do regular Melicha. And that's what Rabbeinu Tam says, yeah, that's probably what Melicha means, that they're doing in the context of regular Melicha. Anyway, there are other Shitas in Rishonim as well. The Rabbi has his own Shita in Tzvim Day, and the Rabbi has his own Shita in Sagas on the Rambam. Okay, the Rama says, V'yesh Omrim, Tanane Bekibidabar Vieshal and Vaksham of Kun with a sleek rotel.
Whoa.
So the Ramah goes much more math. The Machaber says what we thought was a Chumrah, that even Maliach Likadeira is considered salty enough. Against Rashi said, no, it's gotta be way saltier than that. Rabbi says it's gotta be way saltier than that. Comes along the Ramah, Maliach Litzli is considered salty enough. Because we're not Bekibidabar. The Ramah often has chumras that are based on we're not Bekiyim B'davar. Right? We just don't know exactly where to draw the line. So that's Ramah. We're not Bekiyim B'davar. Now, that's as far as how much salt and how much time. We still have a few more pieces to go. Yeah?
You might be able to say we're not Bekiyim B'davar, but it's like we know how to do Malika. We do Malika, we know what's enough. Otherwise, all of our food would be trash. So. I don't know.
But you could just be machmir on the malicha and do enough salt that's vatei good enough for the malicha. But you may have already accomplished maliach karasach and earlier with less a smaller amount of salt, with less quantity of salt. In Yimeikra did, it might have already been karasach. We know what we do for malicha to be safe, to make sure that the malicha is a valid malicha. Yeah, strange. When the Rabbeinu Tam's whole shita is right, it's a good question. Meaning, he's asking how can the shach defend Rabbeinu Tam and say, "Oh, this isn't really talking about the malicha; it's talking about next time you put salt on it after the malicha." Rabbeinu Tam's whole shita that's malach l'kadeir is every case in the Gemara was about the regular malicha that they did. It was about malicha to remove the dam. Oh, good question. Okay, how much of a bliya is generated? So we see what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You know, it's a big machlok rishonim. Meaning, when Maliach Karosef, whenever you have anything kin, anything is like something else, you always have to ask yourself, is it the equivalent of or similar to? Right? Shomea ke one. Is it when you're Shomea, it's as if you're actually saying the words, and therefore, Achokos Rashi tells us in Brachos, right? When you're in the middle of Shemon Esrei and they're saying Kedusha, so should you stop and be Shomea? Or is that, no, it's a hefsik, it's ke one ma'ish, or is it not similar to? It's similar to in the sense that it's ki'ilu, you're saying it, but you're not actually saying it, so it's not really a hefsik, right? So that's, you have the same thing over here. Maliach kiroseach. If you actually had hot pieces of meat that were touching each other, a hot piece of meat touching a hot piece of cheese, it's mavlio maflit through and through, it takes up the whole thing. So the shita of the Rambam matos, who is tesvav la metalim, is that exactly that, maliach kiroseach, shita of the Rambam and chulin as well. Fine. The Rosh in Chulin, Oschav Dalin, in the Yeh Perk of Chulin, and the Rosh in Torah Sabayis, said, no, it only affects Kedei Klipa. And that's the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, unless it's a Dabar Shameh, we'll soon see that the Rama tells us to always assume that everything is a Dabar Shameh, but unless it's a Dabar Shameh, unless it's a fatty food, so we assume that it only goes Kedei Klipa, as the Torah says. The Ra'as, according to the Yisrael Seif, as somewhere in between. It goes more than Kedei Klipa, but not quite through the entire food. What's the shear in between the Kedei Klipa and the entire food? Kedei Netiva. If you take an inch off or something like that. Kedei Netiva. Now, in Shirei Arav, if you look, Soloveitchik suggests that the Machlokes is really how literally to take the phrase of Maliach Karoseach. Is it Mamish Karoseach in that the transfer of meals is considered to have happened through meat? Or is it Kurosech, and that it's Mavliya, but the method of transference is clearly not as strong, right? That's the postures of Machlokas between the Rambam on the one hand, and the Rush, and even the Ra'ah on the other hand. The Rosh then further has a suggestion, which I don't want to get too into because we're going to run out of time, but it's interesting to see how Mufruk it is. You can take a look, where he tries to connect to the Machlokas about how salted it has to be, meaning that maybe the Machlokas about how far the Gleos go relates to the machlokas about how salty it has to be in order to get to the level of Maliach Kiroseach. where he tries to suggest that if you assume that it's groseh mamish, then it makes sense that it needs to be really, really, really salty. That beliach lahatsnia. Whereas if you assume that it's not groseh mamish, it's only going to do kadeh matila, kadeh klipa, something like that, then probably just maluach lekadeva is good enough. Meaning the saltier it is, the more it's gonna be mafflit, and therefore the two machlokas might relate to each other. Again, you have to figure out how mukhruch it is. Take a look at Rabbi Kornitzberg's notes on the bottom of the Shirei Rav over there, and you'll see how mukhruch Rabbi Kornitzberg thought it was. But you know, possible discussion point to have. Another nafkamina, by the way, in this chakira is in kiroseh mavish or not kiroseh mavish. Is do we say tasag by melicha? Right, do we assume that Tassah governed by Malicha? The Tosis in Chulin, Kofi Gimel Amar Aleph, and the Rush in Simim Amal say that there's no Tassah governed by Malicha, but the Torah quotes a Rush, but that if you hold Malicha, can ask for the entire thing, that's only if it's Dover Maluach is the Tassah. But if the Dover Maluach is the Ilah, then it's only going to ask for Kedek Malicha. So the Shach points out, Chaps and Afkamina for us too, since we hold that a Dover Shamin Maluach can ask for Kula. Right, we hold when somebody's Maluach and it's a fatty food. We pass in that actually does go for kula when it's a fatty food. So the Rashba would say that that's only true for meluach is lamata, because you say that tasal gava. If you hold the transference happens machmas chamimus, then it makes sense that we would say tasal gava here as well. But if you hold that it happens through the charifus, right? So that's another chakira that asks: is it the charifus or the chamimus that's generated? Okay. Which, by the way, might be the machlokas Rama and the Chaber about the first 18 minutes or after the first 18 minutes. Is it the charifus or the chamimus? Meaning, in the first 18 minutes, it could be that's where the chamimus is being generated through the melicha, but the charifus is there after the first 18 minutes. So all of these machlokas may or may not be related to each other. I mean, you have to work through to see if any of them are really related to each other. Now, the Gemara in Chulin, Adav Kofi Gimel, says that salt can be maflit, but it can't be balaya. So when both foods are salty, or the iser is maluach and the heter is tafel, it will prohibit the heter. But if the iser is tafel, the iser is unsalty, the iser is bland, and the heter is maluach, then you only need to rinse off the heter, because the salt will not help it be balaya iser from the other piece. The shulchan aruch therefore paskins, where you have only one of the foods is salty and the other one is not, you only need to remove kedei klipa from the food that isn't salty. The food that is salty, you can just rinse it off. However, Rama writes that that's only if it's dry, but if the food is moist, meaning every turn, that every place where the mechaber has any shemitz of leniency in this sieve, the Rama stomps it out immediately and says that we need to be machmir. Right, so he says, yeah, if you have something, if you have a beef jerky, maybe, you know, it's totally dry, but if there's any moisture whatsoever, so then we assume, says the Rama, that the even if it's slightly moist, it's going to asur the kosher food. Shulchan Aruch adds, the ein chiluk bein meliach elyon v'tavatachon meliach tachon v'tavatachon, right, that we already discussed, Shulchan Aruch paskins, that it's not about tasa gavar over here. yeah. And the Shach points out that the Chafs and Afkamina for us. Now, Shulchan Aruch in the Ramat Sifhei adds another important thing. He's machmir when it comes to, which we referred to a few times already, but let's bring it back. The Ramat is machmir when it comes to fatty meat. He holds that fatty meat, you know, you have to be machmir that it's going to be balaya through and through. And then he throws a chumra al kabi chumra. Not only are we machmir by Dabba Shamein, that goes through and through, but we're not bekiyim in what's the davar shavei. So how many things are we not experts in? Right, we're not bekiyim in what's the davar shavei. We're not bekiyim in what's meliach l'kedera versus meliach l'tzli, and therefore even meliach l'tzli we have to be machmir, right? So if you have a piece of meat with any amount of salt in it, essentially, with even just meliach l'tzli, you automatically have to assume that it's maflit bekulo in the other piece. Because it's a davar shamei and it's salty. Even though it doesn't look salty and it doesn't appear to be a davar shamei. Because we're not bekeen neither one of those things. So that seems like, a slightly salted piece of meat that's not so fatty, comes in contact with cheese or non-kosher meat, the entire other piece becomes asur. However, there is a machlokas achronim, whether we say einanu bekeen on two things simultaneously. Meaning, how much are we going to let the Ramah, like a runaway train, just be machmir and everything? And at what point are we going to say, like, whoa, we're not Svartim, but like, you know, we're not so not Svartim, right? Meaning like cool down a little bit. Meaning, like, are you going to say two Einun of the Kiyans in the same halacha? So if you look, the Prima Gadim in Sif Seidas of Kan Chabad says that even Malicha Sleep, we'd ask for the whole thing. Yeah, we say two Einun of the Kiyans. However, the Kiveger over here in Sim Sadiyal says that it's Sagi Beklipa, because you don't say a double Einun of the Kiyan. Meaning, okay, yes, you have to assume it's Maluach, but you don't have to assume that it's Shavim if you don't know it's Bishavim. In our homes, we never really have a case of Malicha that's more than Malicha Tzitzli. So we would never really have, you know, Einun Echamach Lesmolfo in the realest sense. The most we'd ever have in the... Unless, like, you spilled, like, a whole box of salt all over something, you know? Like, we would never really have such a case. So even though we're nervous about Einun Bekiyim, and, you know, and we have things that are Malicha Tzitzli, we only have to be machmir with meat that's fatty. But let's say you have vegetables. Vegetables don't seem to be fatty things, or a piece of bread that's treif. We would not assume that we would assume it's not a davar shamein, and we would rely on our bekiyas that it's not shamein, since we don't combine two einun of bekiyas with each other. How many times in my life have I gotten shaylas about chogiyach proseach? And treif of things being treifed up in the kitchen and having to make the call, is it a davar shamein and have any kids? So the next time I get the shayla will be the first, right? Meaning this is not this sif is valuable because every piece of Torah is valuable, but also like it just gives us an introduction to Hilchos Melicha in case we ever want to learn Hilchos Melicha. As far as like halacha lemaisa, it's very hard to think of cases where it comes up. Unlike Sif Zayin, there are cases that are very relevant that do come up in a typical kosher kitchen. So Be'ezus Hashem on Sunday we'll get into Sif Zayin, Sif Chasmir and Sar. We'll get into Sif Zayin and some halachic ramifications of it, and maybe we can start some Sunday.